Nora Manger showed Rachel around the base of the tower, while Tolland and the others trailed behind, talking among themselves.
"See those boreholes in the ice under the tripod?"
Nora asked, pointing, her initial put-off tone softening now to one of rapt fervor for her work. Rachel nodded, gazing down at the holes in the ice. Each was about a foot in diameter and had a steel cable inserted into it.
"Those holes are left over from when we drilled core samples and took X-rays of the meteorite. Now we're using them as entry points to lower heavy-duty screw eyes down the empty shafts and screw them into the meteorite. After that, we dropped a couple hundred feet of braided cable down each hole, snagged the screw eye with industrial hooks, and now we're simply winching it up. It's taking these ladies several hours to get it to the surface, but it's coming."
"I'm not sure I follow," Rachel said. "The meteorite is under thousands of tons of ice. How are you lifting it?" Nora pointed to the top of the scaffolding where a narrow beam of pristine red light shone vertically downward toward the ice beneath the tripod. Rachel had seen it earlier and assumed it was simply some sort of visual indicator, a pointer demarking the spot where the object was buried.
"That's a gallium arsenide semiconductor laser," Nora said.
Rachel looked more closely at the beam of light and now saw that it had actually melted a tiny hole in the ice and shone down into the depths.
"Very hot beam," Nora said. "We're heating the meteorite as we lift."
When Rachel grasped the simple brilliance of the woman's plan, she was impressed. Nora had simply aimed the laser beam downward, melting through the ice until the beam hit the meteorite. The stone, being too dense to be melted by a laser, began absorbing the laser's heat, eventually getting warm enough to melt the ice around it. As the NASA men hoisted the hot meteorite, the heated rock, combined with the upward pressure, melted the surrounding ice, clearing a pathway to raise it to the surface. The meltwater, accumulating over the meteorite, simply seeped back down around the edges of the stone to refill the shaft, like a hot knife through a frozen stick of butter. Nora motioned to the NASA men on the winches.
"The generators can't handle this kind of strain, so I'm using manpower to lift."
"That's crap," one of the workers interjected. "She's using manpower because she likes to see us sweat."
"Relax," Nora fired back. "You girls have been bitching for 2 days that you're cold. I cure that. Now keep pulling."
The workers laughed. "What are the pylons for?" Rachel asked, pointing to several orange highway cones positioned around the tower at what appeared to be random locations. Rachel had seen similar cones dispersed around the dome.
"Critical glaciology tool," Nora said. "We call them shabas. That's short for step here and break ankle."
She picked up one of the pylons to reveal a circular borehole that plunged like a bottomless well into the depths of the glacier.
"Bad place to step."
She replaced the pylon.
"We drilled holes all over the glacier for a structural continuity check. As in normal archaeology, the number of years an object has been buried is indicated by how deep beneath the surface it's found. The farther down one finds it, the longer it's been there. So, when an object is discovered under the ice, we can date that object's arrival by how much ice has accumulated on top of it. To make sure our core dating measurements are accurate, we check multiple areas of the ice sheet to confirm that the area is one solid slab and hasn't been disrupted by earthquake, fissuring, avalanche, what have you."
"So how does this glacier look?"
"Flawless," Nora said. "A perfect solid slab. No fault lines or glacial turnover. This meteorite is what we call a static fall. It's been in the ice untouched and unaffected since it landed in 1716.